Tom Woods Show, episode 1618.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here, The Tom Woods Show.
No matter who you are, this message is directed at you. You're overwhelmed with email. You don't know how to handle it. You can never stay on top of it. What do? You use SaneBox, which will help manage your email and get you your sanity back. Visit SaneBox.com/Woods today to start your free trial and get a $25 credit. That's SaneBox.com/Woods. Hey everybody, Tom Woods here. Very glad to have Jack Spirko back on the program. Jack hosts the Survival Podcast, which I believe he has been doing for at least a dozen years. There's nobody who knows more about this stuff than Jack does. And I just want to talk to him about the kinds of questions that maybe some of us are having now a little bit too late. What should we have done? What should we do next time to prepare for unforeseen events, like, for example, what we're living through today with the virus? So let's get right over to Jack. Jack, welcome.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me on today.
It's been so long. I guess the way I look at the world is every 7 years, I got to talk to that Jack Spirko. It should be sooner. I'm sorry the time lag is so long, but doggone it, we are in one of these situations where maybe the analogy for me is nobody cares about the Federal Reserve until you're in the middle of a financial crisis. Then they're all interested. And likewise for you, boy, the temptation must be strong to say, I told you so.
I'm trying not to, because I don't think that helps anybody right now.
No, of course not.
You know, I'm doing the best I can to help people, but what I try to do that's kind of in that vein, but it's not accusational, is I'm the fire marshal, and the fire marshal's not really the guy you call when your building's on fire. He's the guy you call to keep your building from being consumed by flame before it happens. And a lot of what I teach is preventative and how you get ready for this. But I've been trying to provide as much information for as I can for people as how to get through this, because this is something we can all get through. I mean, that's the good news. This is something with an expiration date on it. And I just did a show Friday last week, and I really covered action items. We'll be talking about a lot today, but anything people want more of, they can check that out and check the show out. And we got some pretty good stuff on this now.
Excellent. I decided that I would just ask my folks what they want to know. So I went into my private group and I said I was to talk to you, and I said, what would you folks want to ask? Now, incidentally, I have a supporting listeners group where one of the benefits is a Facebook community, and I have a bunch of other benefits as well. And I want to tell you that I modeled mine after yours. It's not quite the same, but I got ideas for mine from yours all those years ago. So thanks for being an inspiration.
Emulation is a compliment, man. Thank you.
Oh, it's, what you're doing is absolutely fantastic. First of all, I know this is an obvious answer, but can you just give us some kind of a sense of maybe a spike you've seen in interests or downloads or whatever? I mean, is it real?
It's real, yeah. I mean, I've seen a lot of people. What I'm noticing, a big difference is my listener numbers are so large that even a fairly large increase, you know, it ebbs and flows. So I'm not sure about that. But social media is where it's been really obvious, you know, picking up tons of followers in different platforms, that all of a sudden, you know, being prepared is probably a good idea. And like I said, we're doing what we can to help people in the middle of a crisis, which is, it's difficult to prepare when you already have the problem, but there's a lot of things you can do right now.
Let's start with the most basic question of all. Some people get into this, I don't know if it's a lifestyle, but let's say an approach to living whereby they want to be really prepared for all kinds of unforeseen possibilities. And you can go to, just depending on your budget, you can provide for all kinds of scenarios. But suppose you're just the average person, you just want to do what's sensible. You don't want to devote a huge amount of resources, but you want to be strategic in what you do devote your resources to. You want to really, really make sure you've hit the fundamentals. What do you advise for that person?
Boy, I just wish people would have asked me that more often, you know, the last 12 years. 12 years I've been teaching this basic format. 30 to 60 days minimum of everything that you need to be able to take care of yourself and your home. That includes the financial aspects of it. Is oversimplified as that sounds. I just want you to think about this right now, Tom. What if the majority of Americans, if you said, hey, go home, stay home for 2 months, could just go, okay. I mean, think of how simple that is. Not a bunker in the middle of Montana, not 400, you know, pallets of MREs, not, you know, a militia group or anything. If the average person just had the wherewithal to handle, if they had 30 days, if that was the standard, people over the next 30 days procuring for the 30 after that, we wouldn't have shelves bare. And if we had 60, I don't even think you'd have the disruptions in the supply chain that you do right now, other than some special children that think this is, you know, the end of Western civilization would still be out, you know, over purchasing. But that's it. Sit down with your significant other, if you're not a loner, and map out what you consume and what you use to provide your basic comfort and needs for 60 days period of time. And then once you know what that is, go do 1 week of preparedness. In other words, get what you need until you can go a week. In addition to kind of the natural, you understand what I mean? Like, most people do have some buffer. If they didn't right now, we'd be totally screwed, right? Most people have stuff in the refrigerator, their pantry, you know, they have some savings, whatever. So in addition to that, let's do 1 week. Okay, great. You know what you've just done? You've given yourself 7 days. Okay, do that again. What do you got now? 14. Do that again. What do you got now? You got a month, basically. Do that again. What do you got now? You got 2 months. I know that sounds so simplistic. And here's the sad part of it. Until 3 weeks ago, it was very easy to do. And so that's the mindset people need to have as we get through and come out of this, and you want to be prepared for the next thing like this that happens. Do that. Don't go try to marathon it. Don't go out and buy, you know, hardened bunkers. Don't go trying to create, you know, the road warrior group or something like that. Just put the systems in place you need. And notice I didn't say a single word about pandemic there, because my fear is that people are going to be always preparing for the last disaster. If you prepare to deal with 60 days of no support, it doesn't matter what the disaster is. Unless it crushes your house, you're going to be okay. And then have a plan to leave if you have to leave. Like, this is the perfect example of, people always ask me, do I bug in or bug out? Depends. What gives you a better chance of survival? Best thing you can do right now, if you can, bug in. And 60 days of supplies. And I think that most people with that, you can go out, you can go to the grocery store still, you can get stuff. If you have 60 days right now, you're not real freaking out. You're not contributing to the problem. And when you do make a supply run, if you pick up 7 days worth, that's, you know, you're fine.
So let me go over to the questions from my folks. So supportinglisteners.com is the site. Those of you who want to be in the group, and this is where I solicit questions. So somebody wants to know, and I think maybe you're answering that with the groceries. Yeah. If you haven't prepped, is it too late now?
On some levels it is, right? Because you can't, well, right now, and more stores are doing this. I wish to God they had all done it right from the beginning. I don't want the government coming in and clamping down with, you know, here's limitations. But every store out there right now is beginning to put limitations on how much you can buy. They should have done that immediately so that we didn't create this crisis, because we still have the same amount of people eating the same amount of goods, wiping the same amount of butts. This happened when everybody panicked and went out and bought as much as they could. What you should do now, step one, inventory what you have. My wife and I, even though we kind of do this all the time anyway, we went and we emptied all of our freezers and our pantries this weekend. We inventoried everything, we organized it, we put it back and kind of restructured it. That gave us, well, how long can we go without digging into our long-term stuff that we don't even need to get to today? Like, because Mountain House, stuff like that, that's off the table for a while. You're not getting any. How long can we go and what does it look like? Okay, now we know. Now for us, it was kind of like, yeah, that feels pretty good, because this is what we do. This is what we've always done. For the average person, they might go, oh, it's better than I thought, because they'll realize, you know, I've got 3 weeks worth or whatever. Then you have to look at, when you go out to resupply, how often do you think you're going to be able to resupply, and try to go a few more days than that. That's kind of the best that you can do right now. And, you know, if you have an opportunity to pick something up that's in short supply, even though you have more, go ahead and do it. Like, if you go to a store right now and they have toilet paper and they were smart enough to say one pack to a customer, you know, pick up a pack. Because it's crazy how people went nuts with that. But I get it, right? We all use it. It doesn't go bad. But just kind of, you got to kind of add on to that. Now, once we clear this, you can take the approach of every time you know, whatever your frequency of shopping is, if it's every 7 days, buy 9 days worth of stuff and focus on what you can store. And if you do that every week at the end of a year, just by doing that, like for a weekly shopper that buys 2 extra days of stuff every week, at the end of a year, you got about 50 days. No, actually you got 100 days, right? So, cause you're adding 2 days a week for 50 weeks, you got 100 days. So somewhere in there, you could even back off of that if you don't think you need to be out there. But, you know, do it 90 days, you got 3 months. That's the way to do this. Right now, no, you can't do that as effectively right now as you could have a few months ago.
I like that strategy, though.
It's simple.
That's a way of, yeah, you can be doing it consistently as part of your life. Because I think if people think this is going to be some big project I have to do, they'll never get to it. But if it's some little adjustment they can make in the course of errands they're already running, that's something else entirely.
Yeah, don't use software. Get a notebook, write things down, know what you have, and plan and figure out how much, like, you know what you eat, you know what your kids eat, right? So you do that with food, you do that with medicine, you do that with, you know, and your dog food. You know, we had a pretty good reserve of dog food, but I went out and bought, you know, 150 pounds of dog food. And I got one dog that weighs that much. So that's, you know, a month of extra dog food. So my dogs are good for 90 days. My livestock's good for at least 90 days. We're good for well past 90 days. So the only thing we're trying to figure out now is dealing with our grandkids and the situation we're in with the kids coming here and then going home and then coming here and like and creating exposure. Because if I can solve that next, I'm just going to wait this thing out. And the more people that can, I know nobody likes being told to by the government, and you and I both hate government. But honestly, right now, the best thing you can do for yourself is isolate yourself as much as possible, as much as it sucks.
Yeah, yeah. Now, what about mistakes you see people making? People who don't know what they're doing, but their hearts are in the right place and they're trying to provide for themselves. Are there things that they buy that they think they need that they don't really need, or they don't get enough of the right things? Or what are they doing what is the most common error you see?
Well, people are going out and they're buying like massive amounts of bulk goods that a lot of them probably do not know how to use. So like flour off the shelves. Most people in this country couldn't bake a loaf of bread right now if they were given $200 to do it, you know, or they're buying rice or they're buying dry beans or something like that. So like, here's a perfect example, dry beans. It's a lot of energy required to turn dry beans into something you're going to eat. You have to soak them. They take time to cook. And when this first started, all the dried beans were going away and there was plenty of canned beans. Now, things have gotten really crazy in some markets. I mean, my market, it's honestly not that bad here right now. You can go out and get what you want. I mean, it's not that bad at most stores. Now, there's some stores that are in really high density areas, even compared to where we are, and they get stripped pretty hard. But if you go out early during the week, you can get what you want. Focus on things that your kids, I always teach, eat what you store what you eat. So as long as what you normally eat is available right now, great. Like one of the things though you're going to see is a lot of markets I've seen pictures of like the meat section just wiped out. Look for that to go away pretty soon. Couple reasons. One, people are strapped on cash. Okay. Meat's expensive. Number two, I don't know, what's your house like? How are you fixed for freezer space, Tom?
In my old house, I had a giant separate freezer in the garage. And in this one, I just haven't. When we moved, the last thing in the world I want to do is move that freezer.
Sure.
I donated it to the new owner.
Okay.
And since we've got here, I haven't replaced it.
So you have a finite amount of things that you need to freeze you can store. So yeah. A lot of Americans that went out and bought as much meat as they could get their hands on, they're now going to be in a place they're going to buy per week or per 2 weeks what they can consume because they ain't got no place to put it. And they sure don't know how to store it other than a freezer. So like one of the things we do, we have extra freezers and people say, well, you know, what if the grid goes down? I have a generator. I have 60 gallons of gasoline. I can run my freezer for 3 hours a day and keep everything frozen in it. You know, the first thing you do if your power goes out, you go ahead and plug your generator in but don't start running it yet. Don't conserve your gas. Take a whole bunch of moving blankets, thick quilts or whatever, throw them on top of your freezer to better insulate it. Then run it a few hours a day, you know, run it for 2 hours, then let it go off for 12, then run it for 2 hours. You'll keep everything frozen. Fill it up. Any space in your freezer that doesn't have something in it, put water bottles in there. Now you got water, right? And then that creates a thermal battery for you. And you can just use your generator a little bit. So like when this all comes back around, you might want to think about improving your freezer space. You know, even just a simple, and I like stand-ups because they're a lot more... if you've ever had a chest one, but they suck. You have to like dig through them and all. Better than nothing, but the stand-up ones are a lot easier to keep organized and make sure you don't forget about stuff. Like that would be a good thing to look at going forward, adding. And that's why you're going to see more meat. You have to like things that people shouldn't be buying. I don't know what the hell people are buying bottled water for. And I know why they're doing it. They're doing it because the last big disaster everybody saw were the hurricanes. Everybody needed bottled water. Everybody always responds to the last disaster. You have a sink in your house that provides unlimited water. you don't need cases of bottled water. You need bottles to fill up if you're worried about, you know, does your water go down in the middle of this? And you know, that's not been something that we really had to worry about, but that can happen. We teach water readiness. But what I've taught for years is somebody, you know, if you don't consume this, either does 2-liter soda bottles or like the big 1-gallon Arizona iced tea jugs. Those containers are really, really rugged. They're food grade. Clean them out, fill them up with water. So simple to end up with 50, 100, 200 gallons of water sitting in small portable units with you know, a soda bottle is designed to deal with carbonic acid under pressure. Water's nothing. You don't need to, like, you know, treat your water with Clorox or anything. Rinse the bottle out really good. Give it a good cleaning. Maybe a little Clorox to clean the sugars out of it or whatever. But once it's clean and dry, all you got to do is refill it out of your faucet. If you start worried about, you know, using your stores, use the water out of the bottle. When the bottle's empty, fill it back up. And then you're not out at Sam's Club fighting over cases of water when you could be filling your cart with things that you actually need that you don't have an unlimited supply of at your house. I mean, that's the as dumb as the toilet paper looks. I get that. You can't just make toilet paper at your house. Like most people can't anyway, right? I could grow it if you really have to. But, you know, you have an unlimited supply of water at your home. Use it.
All right. I got a bunch more. Let's quickly pause for a brief message. How about city living versus in the country? How does that affect the equation?
It's huge right now. Number one, first of all, I guess the advantage in some situations that I've seen is not as much to the rural communities when it comes to procurement from a market. If you think about rural communities, like there might be one big market within 25 miles that everybody uses, right? Where if you're in a market like mine, which is, you know, Dallas-Fort Worth is 6.2 million people throughout the whole Metroplex, but there's thousands of groceries. So if you go to the little bit outlying ones, and it's not like everybody needs to go there. So that's made it easier. The downside with the pandemic, look where the most cases are. New York, and specifically the New York City and the area around it. That population density in a pandemic is a massive weakness. It is a huge weakness. The other weakness those people have, and I feel so bad for them, is, you know, they've convinced themselves they can live in an apartment that's 200 square feet. You know, a lot of them don't even have any food in their apartments. So the thing you have to look at if you are urban is how do I make sure I provide for the ability to store food and other materials and things that I need. Years ago, I covered a piece. It was in like Salon Magazine or something like that. And it was called The Fashionistas. And it's these women that lived in Manhattan and the areas around there. And they call them fashionistas because they kept their clothing and their shoes and stuff like that in their oven and in their refrigerator. Now, how much food do you think that person has? This is why when Hurricane Sandy hit, I actually was so moved by this. I helped found a nonprofit to do disaster relief. There were people, and I used to work that market long ago, Tom, like way, way back. I was a sales manager for the Northeast region for a really big company. And some of the neighborhoods I saw this go on, these are not people that you would expect to be in a dumpster. 48 hours after Sandy, they had videos of people climbing in dumpsters for food in very affluent neighborhoods in Manhattan. So the risk there is strain of the resources and transmission. And that's why I think right now almost half of the total cases in the United States are out of New York. Now, that's a little skewed, and this could make people feel a little better. The denominator is much bigger than we think it is. They're doing a lot more testing there than they are in other parts of the country, so they're finding more of it. I think that the overall death rate is much lower than we think. It's even lower than we think it is, because I think a lot more people have this than don't. But boy, when you look at something, even if it's a 1% or whatever death rate, the bigger the number, the more people go in that 1%, if you see what I mean. So, man, urban areas, you got to be really hyper-vigilant right now, and you've got to do what you can to make do with the space that you have. And it's really hard to, in a short format like we're doing today, explain like how to preserve meat or whatever. I will say you cook it, break it up into segments, and more fits in the freezer that way. You know, when you cook meat, you reduce its size. So break it down, you know, get the big cuts if you can, make that into individual portions, wrap that up, freeze it individually, and that will make your life easier as you go through the next few weeks to maybe even, I would say, a couple months for some people.
How about something like if martial law is declared? Now, I know that's not, I mean, you have a podcast, the Survival Podcast, and I think the purpose of it is to stay alive during life-threatening emergencies. So if there's martial law, I don't think you're saying go out guns blazing and you know, drive around wherever you feel like going, but What advice do you have to people in that kind of situation if they, I mean, maybe you shouldn't be moving around. I'm not quite sure. Or somebody else asked, you see on social media sometimes, I don't think it's ever actually going to be adopted, but you hear people saying, we should go door to door. And if anybody has more than 2 weeks worth of food, they're hoarders. And we should, I mean, it sounds like the Soviet Union with the kulaks. We should take their excess and redistribute. I mean, what do you recommend? And how should we think about stuff like that?
First of all, you know, don't advertise what you have, because you're more likely to have a jealous neighbor or somebody come to your door than you are the government to come see what you have. The logistics of that in a nation like ours are really kind of insurmountable. There's a lot of talk right now about activating National Guard units. And, you know, if we had the freaking Nazi SS as our National Guard, I would be a lot more concerned about it. The truth is, and I'm sure you do, I know people that are guardsmen, right? They're people just like me. I served in the United States Army. They're not going to send the National Guard out to start rounding people up. The last thing you want to do in a pandemic is round people up. I think what people have to understand is the government doesn't want this. I promise you, if the government could push a button right now and make this go away, they would have pushed that button a long time ago. Now, there is the no good crisis going to waste. There's some definite things that I'm concerned about long-term consequences, governmental power and stuff like that. But if they send a National Guard out right now, they're going to send a National Guard out to do a few things. One might be, they may very well, you know damn well there are certain parts of this country that in a crisis like this, if it goes long enough, people will start looting and stuff like that. They may send those guys out there to prevent that. And those guys will be risking their ass a hell of a lot more than they're going to be bothering you in that situation. Two, they use the National Guard to feed people. We deploy our troops all over the world, you know, when there are disasters in other countries. I'm not going to get into what we do as far as foreign intervention. That's a different segment. But when there are disasters like earthquakes and stuff, we send these guys to go feed people in other countries. It amazes me. I watch people that way over hero worship our troops. And then when they just deploy the guard to feed people, all of a sudden they're taken over and they're going to put us in FEMA camps. This is it's not the time for this. Now, let's say that I'm wrong and they did some of this. You know what the best thing to still do is? Keep your mouth shut and shut up till it's over, right? Because in the middle of this, I'll tell you what you don't want to be. You don't want to be in a high density population full of people with bad medical care. That's what going to jail is. One of the groups of people I'm most concerned for right now are prisoners. You know, there's already cases of COVID inside Rikers Island, and it's really easy for us to like just wash our hands of those people and say, not my problem. A lot of those people, you know, you and I both know, are in there for victimless crimes. They shouldn't be in there in the first place. I mean, sure, there's some really bad people in there too, but man, just, I always say play the gray man, which means don't stick out, don't cause no trouble. Whatever you want to do as far as changing this country, God bless you for it. Probably not the time to be active outside instigating problems, because they will come down hard on people to do that right now. And I can object to it, but I can't change it. And I think people need to get in touch with reality here.
Thank God you're talking like this, Jack. I'm telling you, there are people who need to hear it.
I hope so. I hope people listen to people that need to hear it. That's my real concern. There's plenty of people that need to hear it. I don't know if they'll listen. There's video going around right now. There's these armored vehicles rolling through New York City. Everybody's flipping out about it. You know when the video's from? 2013. Take 10 seconds and verify not just that you see a video of something going on. It was probably guard troops moving their crap from one base to another. You know, I don't get it. I mean, one of my best friends in the world is like a brother to me. He's a lieutenant colonel in the National Guard. When I talk to him about all these things the National Guard is supposedly going to do, he rolls his eyes, so he looks like he's going to go into another dimension. You know, I think you're more likely to get that type of behavior out of like certain departments of the police force than you are the National Guard. The National Guard is the guy you work with every day that volunteered to do extra for very little money. That's what a National Guardsman is.
Folks, tell me if you can relate to this. Email is a soul-crushing distraction for you, and it causes you anxiety when you can't keep up with it, and at the end of the day, you know you have more email you haven't gotten to, and then the next day it just gets worse, and you don't know how to get a handle on it. SaneBox's artificial intelligence monitors your inbox. Automatically, knucklehead email is moved to your Sane Later folder. All that's left is the important stuff. If you know how email folders work, then you know how SaneBox works. Find an email in the wrong folder, just move it. Nothing to learn, nothing to install. SaneBox works directly with every single email server or service that has ever been created. It also has neat features like the Sane Black Hole, where you can drag messages from annoying people you never want to hear from again, and Sane Reminders to ping you if someone hasn't replied to your email by a certain date. See how SaneBox can magically remove distractions from your inbox with a free 2-week trial. Visit SaneBox.com/woods today to start your free trial and get a $25 credit. That's SaneBox.com/woods. All right, a couple more quick things. Have you talked on your program at all about scenarios that are so extreme that, let's say, people need to use some brand new medium of exchange? For some reason, I had a question and got some people giving a thumbs up about that. Would love to hear his perspective on media of exchange.
So I guess they're talking about things like cryptocurrency, barter, gold.
Yeah, barter. Yeah, like what would you do? I mean, I don't know why the monetary system would break down, but I guess that would be a sort of thing that you would want to be prepared for. Let's suppose that did happen. I don't think that is going to happen.
I don't think that's going to happen here. I think that there's potential for someday for it to happen. And this is why I try to stay diversified in how I handle my wealth. You know, I don't avoid investing. I do have conventional everyday investments. It's just not all of my money. I keep some of my money in liquid cash, though they're in institutions, because it's really easy to spend money with a debit card right now and have stuff delivered to your house and not leave the house. I also have money in physical cash. I also have silver and gold. I keep about 10% of my net wealth in silver and gold. Not 110, and all these doomsday scenarios, you think you're going to be rich, well, then you'd be rich on your 10%. But I also look at it this way. Let's say nothing goes wrong. When I croak, my grandkids, my kid, they'll get money in silver and gold that no one needs to know about. We always say me, you, and a fence post when it comes to the transfer. I think cryptocurrency is a great thing. I think a lot of people are trying to get rich off of it. And if you do, great, go ahead. But in the end, I keep some money in crypto. I think it's great to be able to spend money without using an intermediary. So I stay very diversified in that as a whole. But one of the things I think people are freaking out about now is all these government interventions. And, you know, they're going to put like $1 trillion in the economy. I think it's going to cause hyperinflation. I know I don't need to explain this to you, but I know that probably people listening, I do need to explain it to. What happens, Tom, if you have a great big hole and throw a whole bunch of dirt into it? What do you end up with? Do you end up with a pile, or do you end up filling a hole?
Yeah, well, of course.
You fill the hole, right?
Yeah.
So if you pump $1.5 trillion into the economy overnight, you can spark some inflation if you're not filling a hole. But when people have less money and you give everybody a couple $1,000 and are already more than that in the hole, the new spending is not a net gain. And if you do it at the same time that the economy is basically at a standstill and there's not a lot of places to spend your money, you're not going to get Weimar out of this. Like, they're hoping to get something like a teeny tinkling of inflation with this. Like, that's what they're begging for right now. And I'm not going to get into why the modern economy both works and is a bad idea at the same time. We both have opinions on that, right? But right now it is what it is. And you're not, if you put out that kind of money right now, you're basically filling a hole. Think about 2008, 2009 with the bailouts. Everybody talked about like almost a trillion dollars up front. But there were tens of trillion dollars in the back door, right? Did they prop the banks up? They stuffed the banks with money. Where was the hyperinflation? How can you push 50, 60, maybe by some estimates, $100 trillion into the global economy? And how can you do that and not get hyperinflation? I didn't say no inflation. How can you even not get hyperinflation? How is it even possible? Because they filled the hole. And that's one thing central banks can do with this fiat money system. And yes, the national debt goes up. I'm not saying it's good, but it's one thing they can do that doesn't have an immediate inflationary effect is fill a hole. And that's what they're really doing here. So I don't see like anybody that's like complaining and crying about this money they're about to hand out. It's socialism, whatever. I have a solution. You can PayPal that money. I will take it so you don't feel bad. Jack@thesurvivalpodcast.com. PayPal it there. I will send you an invoice for consulting so you can deduct it from your taxes next year if we still have a tax system in place. And I will take that dirty money off your hands. I'm not saying I'm for it, but if they send it out, I'm going to keep it. And the way I look at this as a taxpayer against my will, until they pay me 100% of the money I gave them over the years, all I'm getting is my own money back. And that's the advocation. That's just acceptance. Like, it is what it is. People need to rate now on some level. This is not a time for theoretical. This is a time for factual. And in our lives, we live inside of different circles in our head. We have a circle of control, right? A circle of influence, and a circle of concern. You need to get really tight inside your circle of control and a little bit into your influence to help the people that will listen to you right now. And that's where you need to be until we get through this. Then we can go back to theory. Then we can start spouting our ideas, because you and I have very different ideas than the mainstream about how our country should operate. And I am not putting that away. But right now, I'm not going to be able to affect any change there. What I need to do is get myself and my family and my friends and my audience through this shit. And once we're on the other side, we'll ramp it back up. But right now, we got to get through this, if that makes sense.
Tell people very quickly about your podcast. Obviously, they can find, I don't want to say what a typical interviewer says. How can they find your podcast? If somebody doesn't know how to find a podcast, this is not the show for them.
Yeah, they found yours, right?
Right, they did. So tell us about yours.
So my show is called The Survival Podcast. We've been around almost 12 years. We'll be 12 years old in June if I don't die of COVID anyway. We are a 2-time winner of the Podcast of the Year Award. We have about 250,000 people a day that download the show. So we're doing something right. We teach practical preparedness. We also teach, you know, a lot of lifestyle design, homesteading things, more long-term focus. And if you join us right now, we're going to talk a lot about COVID. But even this week, we'll go back to talking about things like how to grow a garden. Because, boy, you know, the shelves are bare of vegetables right now. That's not even a concern to me. I can produce as much of that as I want. So we have a very broad, diverse thing. And we've been covering some things lately. And I don't know if maybe you want to, I don't know how long you want this to go. But I have some thoughts on the chloroquine treatment and what's going on there. And I have some inside info on there that I'm willing to share with you guys. Or they can tune into my show for that. And I also have, you know, some thoughts on how we can do part of that for ourselves until they get their stuff together and actually make this more available. I don't know if you want to talk about that or let people check my show out for it.
Well, if you have a few minutes, I'd be glad to hear it.
Okay. So let's just start with the chloroquine. That's been politicized and it's disgusting. It makes me want to puke the way people are making it politicized because Trump said the word and therefore it must be wrong. The chloroquine is being used all over the world, and it's being used all over our country right now. I have confirmed valid inside sources, inside drug manufacturers. Stuff's being made in the millions of doses. Big, giant corporations don't make millions of anything if it doesn't work. The question is, who does it work for? How well does it work? And what do we do for people that can't use it? Because there are some, it is a medication. Any medication has side effects. But it's working very well, and right now it's being used mostly on people with severe symptoms, heading toward a respirator, already on a respirator. That's because of how much availability there is. The earlier it's given, the better it seems to work, and you want it given with zinc. And the reason you want it given with zinc is chloroquine, which is an old anti-malarial medication, is what's known as an ionophore for zinc, meaning it gets zinc into your cells. And once you get zinc into a cell, it doesn't work for all viruses, but if it's what's known as an RNA virus, a virus that hijacks your RNA, which COVID and all coronaviruses are, it blocks viral replication. You can take a bunch of zinc, but if it doesn't go in your cells, it can't do that function for you. You could have tons of zinc and you only get the function out. You understand what it has to get inside the cell walls. And ionophore gets the zinc into the cell walls. That's why when they're using this where they have availability of it, they're giving it with zinc. There's a Hasidic Jewish doctor in New York City. It was just, he did a video, he put it out. Hopefully Trump watched it because he sent it specifically to Trump. He said he's treated over 600 of his own patients because it's rocking his community because of how close they are as far as, you know, being that tight of a community. It spreads faster. 600 patients he's treated that have tested positive for COVID using chloroquine and zinc with zero hospitalizations. Zero. Now, I can't say it's going to be that way everywhere. The numbers are going to track that way everywhere. This man's a doctor. It's what he said. This got me thinking. I've been recommending a supplement called Q-Certain for 2 months now. Montreal doctor who did work on SARS came out and said Q-Certain works. And I was like, okay, well, I take it anyway. It's a good immune support. Why not take Q-Certain? So I started thinking when I learned all of this about, and I want to be clear, the chloroquine may not only work for that reason. It may do some other things. I don't know. I'm not a doctor, but it does that. So I was wondering, like, is Q-Certain a ionophore for zinc? So I started doing some research. Turns out it is. So that's why it may work better for some than others. The more research I did on this, again, it's called QCertain, the more I found that it's been used in other similar situations. It was actually used for Ebola research. They gave it orally to mice that they then infected with Ebola, and some of the mice that they gave this stuff to survived, and none of the mice in the experimental group or, you know, that they didn't give it to survived at all. So we're not mouses, you know, that doesn't mean it will work, but it did work there and it was very promising. And they did use it on some level therapeutically for SARS. This Montreal doctor said it should work for COVID. So I start research. It turns out it's an ionophore for zinc. And the research I found that had the most success of getting the zinc into the cells was QCertain. And then it's really complicated word I can't say. It starts with an E. But when I looked it up, it's green tea extract. So QCertain, green tea extract, and zinc. Now, the amounts and all, you got to figure out for yourself. But that may be quite useful for people to use until the chloroquine gets used with greater availability. That's kind of the short version of it. I covered in depth on my show today, which is the Monday show this week. I went fast because I know you're short on time at this point. But to me, those are the most promising things that we have. What our government needs to be doing is the chloroquine and the zinc treatment for moderate cases, not just severe, testing. And I don't care what you got to do, you know, bribe, press into service, whatever, PPE equipment. If we can get those three things, we can beat this way faster than anybody thinks right now.
Well, Jack, thank you for your time. Actually, it's your time that I want to conserve because this is, I'm sure you're getting a lot of inquiries and you want to stay on top of this and people are turning to you at a time like this. So I'm glad we were able to work this out. I was glad I still had your email address. It's been so long since I've written to this guy.
I was thinking, why doesn't the guy ever reach out to me anymore, you know? But nothing like a pandemic to get the guy that talks about prepping to be popular again.
Yeah, no, I know it. But as I say, I mean, I may be slow, but every 7 years I circle back to other, you know, guests and get them back on here. But it's the resources you have, the number of episodes you have, the stuff you have. Obviously, the podcast, the Survival Podcast, what's the website?
It's thesurvivalpodcast.com. If you don't want to type all those things out, I have a short URL that redirects tspc.co. You can find me on, you know, Apple, iTunes, Stitcher Radio. Most podcast platforms, if you search for The Survival Podcast, you'll find me. And you can always listen directly off the website. And man, anything I can do to help anybody, reach out to me. And if your people have more they want to hear from me, reach out, man. I'll jump back on for, you know, a short segment or whatever as much as I can. This community's been good to me for 12 years. Really good. I have been able to do podcasting as a profession for about 10 and a half of those 12 years. And to me, now is my time to give back. Now is my time to do whatever I can to help anybody that I can. So if you need me, you reach out. I'm here.
Excellent. Well, thanks again, Jack. I appreciate it a lot. All right, folks, let's see what's coming up later this week. I got a couple of really juicy ones for you. Tomorrow, we're going to talk to Gret Glier again from DonorSee, that amazing app that gives complete transparency to philanthropic contributions. You can see exactly what your donation accomplished in real time. It's an amazing phenomenon, really. And we're going to be talking about how he's taking that technology and using it to assist in places that have been hit particularly hard by the coronavirus. Then the next day, let's say it'd be Thursday, so this, now I'm talking about, I guess, episode 1620, I'm going to have a couple of economists on, and we're going to talk about this extraordinary case study we're living through, the economics of a massive shutdown. What does that really look like? What are the real consequences of that? What's the damage that's done? Just from a purely economic point of view, because we're curious people and we'd like to know. So we're going to cover that, and then I've got a juicy thing for you in particular on Friday. So make sure you subscribe, tomwoods.com/apple, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.